Hey, you're listening to the wrong podcast. Topics today include eggs, eyesight, and errors.
Wrong! What's wrong with you? What's wrong with y'all?
What's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you people? Wrong!
You do have to tolerate it. It's my show.
Hi, I'm Tim. I'm here to talk about politics, culture, religion, sports, and anything else you're not allowed to talk about in polite company. Issue number one! Company! Last week, I put out a challenge to you, my podcast listeners. Thank you for listening. You were challenged, and all of you failed the challenge. I asked a very specific question. I said, what do you call a group of people? Like, a group of lions is called a tribe, a group of giraffes is called a tower, a group of owls is called something. I don't know. I forgot. I asked, what do you call? Oh, it's a parliament. A group of owls is called a parliament. How could I forget that one? So I asked, what do you call a group of people? Nobody responded. Nobody took up my challenge to tell me, to correct me, to inform me. Nothing. What do you call a group of people? I'll tell you what I call you, listeners. So I looked it up. What you call a group of people, turns out that we are, as a race, as a species, are not satisfied with just one word for a group. We have all kinds of words, and it depends on what that group is doing. For example, a team, a committee, a congregation, right? You all know, okay, that's a group. Could be about the same number of people, but we know that they're doing different things. Some other examples, a jury, a class, a band, a choir, a cast, a family, and a community. But there was one that was missing out of this group, and I think it's important to add that there's a certain number of political fundamentalists who really prefer the term mob. Issue number two, de Blasio. Isn't it weird that we all kind of know who the mayor of New York City is? Like, I live in the Los Angeles area, and I'm not exactly sure who the mayor of Los Angeles is. Like, I think I kind of know, but I think they might have just changed. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure who the mayor of Los Angeles is, but I know that Bill de Blasio used to be the mayor of New York City, and I know that he used to be a bad mayor of New York City. And I mean, you know, I guess New York's an important city, so that's why I kind of know that kind of thing. There is something that had happened under Bill de Blasio that is hilarious and sad and awful all at the same time. And this story is not at all timely. I will confess, I'm about a month late telling you this story. That's just the way things go around here on the wrong podcast. This is not a timely podcast. This is not a current events podcast. As much as I can help it, but it is. I know I can't help it. This story is about a month late. But you know who Punxsutawney Phil is, right? Punxsutawney Phil is the groundhog in Pennsylvania that comes out of its shed or hole or marmot cave once a year on Groundhog Day to see if he sees a shadow. And if he sees it, then it's still winter and he's scared and he goes back in his hole. And if it's cloudy, that means the spring rains are coming and winter is over. And I always was so mad at this groundhog for not recognizing it to be spring. Like, come on. I don't like the winter. Let's just get this over with. Groundhog. So they lift up the groundhog and they say, 6 more weeks of winter. And everybody cheers for Punxsutawney Phil. And he's made famous in the movie Groundhog Day, where he is informed by Bill Murray not to drive angry. Well, what you don't know is that in New York City, there's a zoo on Staten Island. And Staten Island is perhaps the least regarded borough of the New York City boroughs. And borough, maybe that's where groundhogs live. And on Groundhog Day, the mayor of New York City is invited to the Staten Island Zoo to pick up Staten Island Chuck. That's their groundhog at their zoo, Staten Island Chuck. So Bill de Blasio, in 2014, he goes, and what you need to know about Bill de Blasio, aside from being a rather ineffective mayor, is that he is a very tall man. He's 6'5". And they give him gloves, and he holds the marmot up over his head like he's supposed to. And Staten Island Chuck, he gets a little nervous, and he starts to squirm because, you know, the mayor's never held him, and he's uncomfortable. And the groundhog falls out of his hands. He drops the groundhog. He dropped Chuck. And then a few days later, Chuck died. He killed Chuck. Now, the zoo came out and said, oh, it actually wasn't Chuck. It was actually Charlotte. We swapped Chuck out for Charlotte. Don't worry, Chuck is fine. And yes, Charlotte died, but I think they were just covering for the mayor at this point. They said Charlotte died, but her injuries were totally unrelated to the drop. But everybody who knows, knows. He killed Charlotte. And if you're wondering, it's called a coterie of groundhogs. A coterie. Issue number 2, Frozen. Okay, like I said, this is not a current events podcast, and that's why I'm talking about something that just happened in Alabama. So the Alabama Supreme Court ruled that a fertility clinic can be sued civilly because the Alabama legislature says that a human embryo is a human and needs to be protected like all other humans. And so three parents who had created embryos with this clinic, they're suing the clinic because somebody broke into the clinic and wanted to check out these embryos while he was in there, and he dropped them. And he dropped them because they were cold. And so these parents are like, hey, we're suing you. You know, this costs us a lot of money. You were supposed to protect our children, and you didn't. And, well, they probably called them our embryos, but you didn't. But they are their children. And the Alabama Supreme Court says, yes, you can sue them, and you can seek damages for the loss of human life. And this is causing all kinds of uproar. Like, this is effectively stopped in vitro fertilization in the state of Alabama. And this clinic in particular needs to figure out what to do. And all the clinics in Alabama need to figure out what to do. Because what if the power goes out and they lose all of those embryos? And what you need to know about these clinics is IVF clinics in general are less regulated than hair salons. They are less regulated than hair salons. And that should give you some pause, right? Just a little bit of a pause. Like, wait, shouldn't there be some sort of regulations? Shouldn't there be some sort of rules? Like, for example, I know somebody who has discovered through 23andMe that they are one of like 24 siblings because this fertility clinic that their parents used the same sperm donor over and over again. And ethically, everybody's like, hey, that's not cool. We shouldn't do that anymore. And the fertility industry as a whole is not so excited about regulation. And so they're up in arms about this. And, you know, this is going to become a big political issue because people are saying, hey, look what the Republicans are doing. They're trying to stop in vitro fertilization entirely. They're going to try to take that out so that nobody can use it. And I don't want to get into all the specifics of it, but I will just say that I think IVF can be ethically dubious. And all I mean is that I think many people don't consider all of the implications of what they are doing. And some of them end up perpetually freezing embryos for decades. And I don't think necessarily that IVF should be stopped or halted or prohibited. I don't necessarily look down on anybody who's used it. There's a lot of questions I would have for anybody who wanted to ask me about those questions. I guess there'd be a lot of questions I would pose to them if they wanted my thoughts about it. But in general, I think you should have a plan for every embryo you create. And I heard somebody say that in regards to the destruction of human embryos at fertility clinics, like, hey, it's just going to happen. Like, they shouldn't worry about this thing with this guy breaking in, because all these embryos are, most of them are actually made to be destroyed. It, kind of like a, hey, you can't make an omelet without breaking a few eggs kind of thing. And like, ugh, that attitude just, ugh, I wish people weren't so callous about this kind of thing. And the reason I brought this up is because I saw a couple of hot takes on the internet, and I, in general, really don't like hot takes, and these were the hottest of the hot takes. The general idea was that people were posting photos of egg cartons, or they're going to the grocery store where all the eggs are stored, taking a photo of all the eggs at the grocery store and saying, hey, look, this is what Alabama considers an orphanage. And there's so much wrong with this hot take. That's why I hate them. They're so, like, you think you're so clever. You think you got one over on everybody, but you're not comparing the right things. Like, first off, chickens are a different species than humans. We all know that, right? Chickens produce their young in a different way than humans do. Humans, the embryo grows inside the female. Chickens, the eggs are fertilized inside the female, and then they continue to grow in something else we call an egg that comes out of the hen, and then is then, you know, sat on. It's incubated. Whew, almost forgot the word incubated. And we also call that thing an egg. The eggs in the store, the chicken eggs at the grocery store, are unfertilized chicken eggs. The chicken produces those whether or not she's had sex or not. We eat those. They aren't embryos inside those eggs. They're just eggs. And at an IVF clinic, at a fertility clinic, they're not just storing eggs. They're storing embryos. Embryos are different than eggs. Quick science lesson. The sperm has half a set of human DNA. The egg has another half of human DNA. You put them together, they make one whole human DNA. It becomes a human organism. It has the full set of DNA, and it's unique to that embryo. It's different than its mother. It's different than its father. It's unique, and it's full. And if you put it in the right place, it will grow and eventually become something that you see and recognize and talk to and subscribe to their podcast for. An embryo is not just a clump of cells any more than you are a clump of cells. You are a clump of cells. You're not just a clump of cells, and neither is an embryo. So the thing with the egg carton thing is, if you bought those eggs and you brought them home and they were fertilized and you went to make your omelet, you would notice. You would notice right away, this is not what I intended to buy. This is different than what I wanted. This little chick, some at some stage in development, would come slithering, sliming, gooping out of your broken egg, and you'd go, ooh, no, that's not right. That's not right. That's not what I wanted. That's not what I intended to do with this. You would not be happy about it. You would know immediately the difference between a fertilized chicken egg and a non-fertilized chicken egg. And I know this because it happened to my mom when I was a kid. I don't know if, I haven't heard of it happening in decades since then, but this used to be a thing that people would get eggs with chicks in them. Doesn't happen now. All you have to do to make sure it doesn't happen is to keep the hens away from roosters. No problem at all. So no, the egg aisle at your grocery store is not an Alabama orphanage. Hey, it's time. What are the rules?
Oh, what are the rules?
What are the rules?
What are the rules?
What are the rules?
You know how in different parts of the country, we say different words for things? Like, some people call it soda, some people call it pop, some people call it Coke. The same is true of Uno. Like, you can't just play Uno with anybody and not discuss, hey, what are the ground rules? What are the rules of Uno? We all think we know the rules of Uno, but in reality, we all have these little cultural differences, these little house rules that we do on our own that are totally different than anybody else. For example, if you give somebody a draw two, are they allowed to put down a card after taking two cards or not? These are things you find out the hard way when you don't discuss the rules ahead of time. And recently, my family, we opened up a new pack of Uno cards, and I don't know why we opened up a new pack, because we've got like three packs already. They all work exactly the same. But this new pack, we looked at the rules because it had a few extra cards in it, and we wanted to know what those cards did. And we looked at the rules for the draw four. Now, what do you do with the draw four? When can you play the draw four? And what do you do after you get the draw four? You've all got something in your head, right? Well, here's what the new updated rules of Uno say about the draw four. You can only play the draw four if you do not have anything of that same color or the same number. That's the only time you can play the draw four. And the person who gets the draw four takes four cards, and then their turn's over. They don't get to play an extra card. Now, if they want, they can challenge the person. You didn't know this part, did you? They can challenge the person who played the draw four. And they can say, I need to see if you have any of the color or the number that's on the table. And if they do not, the person who played the draw four has to take four cards. But if they do have the color, then the person who played the card has to take the penalty themselves. But if you are wrong on the challenge, you have to take six cards. Remember, I want to know what's wrong with you.
What's wrong with you?
If you'd like to submit a question, topic, or tell me how I was wrong, you can email me at listen@thewrongpodcast.com or submit a comment at my website, thewrongpodcast.com. And help me spread the wrong message. If you like what you hear, share it with your friends. Now it's time for my favorite part of the show. I was wrong.
I was wrong. I was wrong.
Listener Drew writes in because he knew I was talking about him. Listener Drew writes in and says, okay, two things. First and most importantly, SLA stands for Service Level Agreement. I said Service License Agreement. Service Level Agreement. You were wrong.
Wrong!
Second, my first point proves your point that acronyms are not helpful. So I was wrong.
Wrong!
Thank you, Drew. I was getting ready to light you up for that, and you came in and spared yourself by owning it. So thank you. Drew went on to say that he asked Microsoft Copilot, which is their AI assistant, if he had used the term service level agreement in an appropriate situation. And the Copilot defined what a service level agreement was and said, no, that's probably not the right term for your context. Probably the term you wanted to use was something like a cutoff date. Listener Tony. Actually, I don't know if Tony is a listener, but he is somebody who is commenting on my website. On my personal Facebook page. I had created a meme based on my last episode about the 10 tribal traps. And I had put those into, you know, a web graphic, a social media graphic. And he was responding to that. So I don't know that he's a listener. And I don't know if he intended this comment to be read, but it's happening. So, and I'm going to call him Tony because that's his name. So, responding to my last episode, he says, for years, many people were shamed about questioning vaccines, COVID origins, the Black Lives Matter push, supporting Trump, etc. And then you want a kumbaya without reflection? No thanks. Look, if someone is willing to reflect on how bad things are now and how great things were several years ago, I'm game to have a conversation. But if someone wants to focus on non-existent issues like January 6th, Trump this or that, and ignore the dumpster fire that is the current administration, I'm at a loss. I have no desire to reach across the aisle and find common ground. At this point, you're either for the safety and security of our futures, or you are hopelessly ignorant. Issue number 4! Foresight! There's this new thing out there right now. It's called the Apple Vision Pro. You might have seen some videos, or you might see people out and about with them. They're basically a headset for your eyes. It's you know, it's like this thing you put over your head, kind of like the Oculus or the virtual reality goggles you've seen. You put them over your eyes. You can see through them, but it also projects something in front of you, like augmented reality. And it like projects like a keyboard that you can type with your hands virtually, and it might give you directions in front of you and, you know, give you an arrow pointing straight or an arrow pointing to the right. And I've even seen videos of people like walking across a crosswalk while swinging their arms like they're playing a game or they're doing something on it. Or in one case, somebody was driving a Tesla Cybertruck. Oh, by the way, I just saw my first Tesla Cybertruck. And it's all supposed to be like chromey and shiny and stuff. And this already looked dingy. And like, if it's going to look dingy, like that's already kind of removing the appeal of it, right? But anyways, some guy was driving some Tesla Cybertruck and he was wearing these goggles at the same time while he was driving and doing something with his arms. And it's like, oh, this is not going to be good for humanity, right? But I'm a little bit intrigued by this device. Like, some people are like, why do we need this? Like, what's the use? And I can tell you, for me, I can see a use case for myself because I'm a graphic designer and I work on very large monitors. And I really cannot work on a small laptop monitor. You know, laptops make it very convenient for people to be like, hey, I'm going to go work in the park, or I'm going to go work at this coffee shop, or I'm going to travel and get my work done. And I'm kind of tied to my monitors. I feel like I really need these big monitors to do my work effectively. And if I had these goggles, well, then I've got an even bigger monitor in front of me, right? Like, if I turn my head to my left and my right, the monitor is even bigger. It's a 60-inch monitor or whatever. So this could be a real game changer for me. I wouldn't need monitors. This would remove my need for monitors. And that's kind of cool. That means I could travel and I could go, you know, sit in a national park somewhere and do my work. That'd be pretty cool. It immediately made me think of this other technology that they're developing called a neural link. And that is something that connects your brain to a computer. And if that takes place, if they get this thing worked out, then I can absolutely see this Vision Pro thing getting reduced down to the size of your eyeball. And they just take out your eyes and put these things in instead. They put these vision orbs in, and suddenly you can see what you see on your computer screen, but it's in your eyes and you're just looking forward. Maybe even close your eyelids and you can still see whatever is on your computer. And maybe the vision's even better than your eyes. Like, maybe it points out things while you're driving, like the speed of the other cars, or if somebody's coming towards you, or, you know, like if you're playing baseball, it can track the ball as it's coming towards you, or you're playing, you know, tennis or pickleball or something like that. Like, help you figure out where the ball's going and how fast. Maybe it can zoom in. You can't zoom in with your eyes, right? Like, That'd be pretty cool. What if it like was infrared or heat seeking? Like all of these things are kind of cool. And imagine that it's not on a pair of goggles. It's like in your eyeballs. It's just, it is your eyeballs. And like this has the possibility for people who are blind that they could see. That is cool, right? Like we want blind people to see. So if the blind can see and it offers all of these advantages, I can totally see people deciding to remove their own eyes and take on this technology as to replace their eyes. And I think that would be a big mistake. I don't think you should do it. If you get the opportunity, if you're tempted by it, I don't think you should do it. And I'll tell you a few reasons why. First is that tools are good. Tools are very good. We should, like, I'm all for tools. And like I said, I would use this Vision Pro thing if it works out. If it works the way I think it could, I'm on board. But we shouldn't imagine that tools are superior to our bodies. Even if they are in some respects, tools are meant to assist our bodies, not replace them. And the thing with a tool is that you can always put it down. If it's no longer useful to you, you can just let go of it. Or if it becomes harmful, you can put it down. For example, a hammer is great, but it, you know, you use a hammer long enough and you start getting blisters or your hand gets tired or something. You can put that thing down. Maybe the hammer breaks. It's easy to put down, go get another one, no problem. But if you replace your hand with a hammer, well, then you're stuck with the hammer. And that may not be beneficial long term. Maybe there's other things you should be doing with your body other than hammering. And maybe this Vision Pro thing isn't the best way to see the world all the time. I firmly believe that we are our bodies. And if we start removing parts of our bodies, we're actually diminishing our physical presence. When you remove any part of your body, you're diminishing your physical presence here and now in reality. And it could be that these orbs, these vision orbs are great. They add all kinds of functions to you, but you don't even see how they might corrupt your character later on. You can't even admit, like there's this argument made by Neil Postman that every technology corrupts us and changes society in one way or another. And we would be wise to think through how each of these technologies is changing us before we adopt them. And unfortunately, we as a species are not super interested in that. We tend to just jump headlong into all of them and grab them because we think they're going to be useful and good, and we don't think about the implications. And then 10 years later, we discover that, hey, the social media thing, it's actually killing a bunch of teenage girls and maybe, you know, distracting people from their kids. And this is just how we are. So we should be slow to take on these, we should be even slower to take on these technologies that require us to remove our body parts, because once we remove our body parts, we can't get them back. We can't re-add our eyes. And eventually, there's this thing called transhumanism that is going to become a bigger and bigger part of our conversations. And transhumanism is the idea that we can use technology to become something other than human. And I think that transhumanism is actually a lie, that it can't make you anything other than a human. It, at best, it can make you a deformed human or a dead human, but it cannot make you a non-human. And I think it's important to preserve our humanity as created as long as we possibly can, and as good health as we possibly can. We shouldn't intentionally destroy it or diminish it in ways that are unnecessary. Like if your pancreas is going to kill you, you've got breast cancer, by all means, self-defense, protect the rest of you. But if that's not happening, keep it. And if we if we adopt this technology first without reflection, well, then when we're presented with the question of transhumanism, what we tend to do is we tend to take on the positions that we form the opinions that match our previous choices, whether they were good choices or not. We're like, well, I made that choice and I want to say I can't admit that that was a bad choice. So I'm going to keep rolling with it and I'm going to go with my choice, and I'm going to go into the camp, whatever the philosophy is, that supported my previous decisions. And so if that means I'm a transhumanist because I made this choice and I like my choices and I can't say that my choices were bad, then I'm rolling with transhumanism and I'm going to push to add more technology, or I'm going to encourage other people to adopt technology over their bodies. And I will admit that different worldviews are going to handle this question much differently than I would as a Christian. Different people believe many different things. Many religions believe many different things about the human body. And, you know, some worldviews will tell you that life isn't worth living at all. So why should you care about your body? So if the ending of a human life is on the table for some worldviews, of course, I know that not everybody is going to agree with me on protecting the human body. For Christians, I want to give you a couple of things to think about from the New Testament. The first is that Paul, in Ephesians 5, he talks about how husbands are supposed to treat their wives. And he uses an analogy. He says, husbands, you have to do what Christ did, and you have to treat your body, you have to treat your wife the way you would treat your own body. And this is the way that Christ teaches, how Christ treats the church. He's willing to sacrifice for it. He's willing to give up his own life for the church. And so, husbands, that's what you're supposed to do for your wives. You're supposed to be willing to sacrifice your own body for your wife. And you have to treat your wife as you would your own body. And Paul says this, he says, for no one hated his own body, but instead he nourishes, protects, and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church. So I'm going to do some algebra here, and I'm going to say that you can easily reverse this verse. That's right, reverse the verse. If you, a husband, are supposed to nourish, protect, and cherish your wife, because that's what you would do to your body, well, it works in reverse. If you nourish, protect, and cherish your wife, then you also should nourish, protect, and cherish your body. You fill in the blanks. What does it mean to nourish, protect, and cherish your body? Now, some people might say, well, what if I just don't need that part anymore? Like, it's just not useful to me. I'm not using it. My life has changed. My circumstances have changed. I don't need all the parts of my body. Well, Paul in 1 Corinthians, he says that he's talking about how we're supposed to view every person in the church. And he uses an analogy of the body. And he says, but now there are many parts, but just a single body. The eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you. Nor again, the head to the feet, I have no need of you. And as for those parts of the body which we consider less honorable, these we treat with greater honor, and our less presentable parts are treated with greater modesty, while our most presentable parts do not require it. But God has combined the whole body, giving greater honor to the part which lacks it, so that there would be no division or discord in the body, but the parts may have the same concern for one another. And if one member suffers, all the parts share the suffering. And if one member is honored, all rejoice with it. So again, do the algebra, transitive property or something. Reverse the verse. If we're supposed to treat every person in our church with honor, and we can't say to one another, I don't have need for you anymore, because that's how we treat the body. Well, if that's how we're supposed to treat the church, then that's also how we're supposed to treat the body. We can't say that I cannot say to the hand, I have no need for you anymore. Nor can the hand say to the eye, I have no need for you anymore. But I could be wrong. If you think I am, let me know. Let me know why. I had fun and I hope you did too. Buh-bye.